welcome to the Where Does It Come From podcast. I'm Jo Salter, your podcast host and founder of Where Does It Come From, a social enterprise focusing on kind clothes that tell tales. In this podcast, I chat with amazing people who've dedicated themselves to making our world a better place through business, social enterprise, campaigning, and much more. This episode is the first part of a two-part discussion with Alan Brown, fibre enthusiast and star of the film The Nettle Dress, which has been showing at cinemas throughout the UK and beyond. In this first part, Alan tells us about his journey into growing his own fibres, and we discuss ways of sharing the skills and the knowledge about local fibre production systems. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Where Does It Come From podcast. I'm Jo, your podcast host, and I've got with me today a film star, although he probably won't like me saying that, and absolute fibre expert, Alan Brown. Alan has recently been doing a tour of cinemas as part of the launch of the Nettle Dress movie, which I'm sure some of you have seen, and if you haven't, you must. So today we're going to discuss Alan's journey and all sorts of other areas. I'm sure we'll veer around across all the different fibres and discussions. So welcome, Alan. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Jo. Thank you for inviting me on to have a chat.
Oh, no, it's going to be really enjoyable. I'm looking forward to it. So first of all, could you tell everybody a bit about yourself and how did you get to the point you're at now?
Well, very circuitous, unthought through journey, really. I mean, I guess I trained at art school, and art's probably been one of the main things I've been interested in over the years in different forms, more tending towards craft and that sort of thing. I did ceramics, post art school I worked as a baker for many years. I just really liked handling materials, and I never really worked or made a living as an artist, but it definitely it sort of informed just the way I lived life. And I've always enjoyed working with my hands and handling things and being interested in materials. But I suppose the more direct route into fibres and textiles was, in the sort of early mid 90s, being quite involved in some of the environmental protest things that were going on. Reclaim the streets, Newbury bypass, those sorts of things. And around that time, I think off the back of that was a sort of sense of I had a sense of what the direction of travel I didn't think was the wise one for us to be going, but how to actually practically do something about it myself. And that kind of led to getting interested in food growing and just taking control of at least one small aspect of an area which I thought I could actually put to practical use. Allotments were very empty in Brighton, where I came down to uni. Quite a few people moved on to the allotments and just started growing food and learning about that, really. And that, I did a permaculture course. I was sort of following that whole movement over decades, really, still going, still on the same allotment site. And my friend Mark and I, who did the photography for the stills in the film, we realised we've been actually working that bit of land now for nearly 25 years, pretty much not far off half our lives on that one spot, I've just learned so much from that. And I think it was sort of through that food growing journey and looking at the wider implications of agriculture and how our food's produced, just started to think about clothes and clothing. And I thought, goodness, I've got a sort of symbolic grip on what it takes to grow food. But what about the clothes I'm wearing? And yeah, that was sort of bubbling around in the background. And then it was really getting Bonnie, our family dog, and being out in the countryside and walking and learning about plants and really kind of starting to get out into the landscape a lot more. I just kept coming across nettles, and I remember learning how to make nettle string when I was younger. So tried to remember how to do that. And in the process of fiddling around with nettles, I started to see that there was this incredible fiber hidden away within the plant. And yeah, you know, I say it was re the whole thing's really just been idle curiosity, which went wildly out of hand. And that was it. I saw the fiber and just thought, man, I wonder, you know, if people have used this to make clothes. And if so, how's it done? And it really just opened my eyes to clothes and textiles really for the first time. And yeah, and I just started to, I couldn't find any nettle fabrics anywhere. It was just, if it had been done, it was long forgotten. And so, you know, I just thought, man, am I ever going to know what a textile from nettles is like? I'm going to have to do it myself. And yeah, so I just picked up all the skills that I would need to realize that, just getting good enough at any of each of them just to be able to progress it to, you know, actually feeling the cloth. And many years later, when I finally got there, I was yeah, I was just blown away that yes, they can indeed make textiles. And I just learned so much and just thought about clothes and clothing and looked at how cloth, how it was, must have been valued traditionally, seeing how much work went into them and what a fundamental, you know, along with food and shelter, clothing really was just one of these primary things. And it still amazes me that that when you really strip down to the core of what we need to survive, those skills are actually within our grasp right here and now. We can actually get control over that. Everything else in the system seems so complicated and really difficult to get to understand, but the very basic things are right within our fingers. And more than just been knowing how to do it, it seems to create a whole different trajectory around it. Suddenly you're really depending on those people around you, and it seems to be, you know, the more basic you strip it down to, the more you really need a collective interrelated group dynamic to make it work. Whereas the other way of doing it largely seems to be splintering and fracturing. So yeah, the similarities between textiles and food production, I realized they felt like two totally disparate paths, but actually I realized how interrelated they actually are and have been.
I think that's really interesting, actually. On there's so many different things that you said that I could follow on from. But I think for me, the food and sort of clothing elements also went together that way because I came at it very much from a fair trade point of view of where are the injustices in the world and how can we improve things. And again, like you, looking at the three things that humanity are basic needs, so food, clothing, shelter. And at that time when I got involved, which was probably 20 odd years ago, the food, there were lots of people looking at local food production systems and organic food production systems, and not so many looking at sort of fiber systems. And I still think for most people, food is something they can understand how they can do better, but clothing, they don't really understand how they can do better. I think it's we're lagging behind a little bit on the what's gone on with food. Whereas I think people still think that clothing maybe has to be produced somewhere else, or mass produced, or produced using plastic fibers or fibers that have grown at the other side of the world. So I think it's really interesting when you look at the work you've done with the nettle dress, but also other fiber systems, locally based fiber systems, that how you can see we've got a long way to go, but we're actually starting to go on that journey. The other thing I really like that you talked about was control, because I feel like the control is taken away from people when it comes to these systems, doesn't it? So people think that they can't produce their own clothes or use locally grown things. So it's really interesting that you're saying to them, actually, you can take back control of your life. Well, not just you. Lots of people are saying you can take back control of your own life just by growing your own fruit and vegetables or whatever, but also you can start getting involved in your own clothing production, right back to the fibre.
Absolutely. And that was that was really revelationary, just sort of seeing how that was the case. And I'm so untrained and ignorant of so many aspects of it, and I find that I have to just boil things back down to as simple as they can go and take it from there. And it's interesting with, I'm fascinated by clothing and have huge admiration for, cutting edge fashion designers and people who can cut and pattern shape and all these amazing skills that we've developed over the years. But I think it does easily overwhelm you and you feel that this is something way beyond your ability to do yourself. And when I look back at earlier forms of clothing, I realize how we solve so many our ancestors solved so many of these problems thousands of years ago, and functioned in harsh environments with natural fibers and very sort of tools lifted from directly from the landscape to shape the clothing. And there's just so many great simple patterns that are within the grasp of everyone to do, and they perform a function and work very well. And so, yeah, and I think there's also that there's just this sort of undefined sense of I understand about economies of scale and ways of doing things that involve more complexity. But on a really sort of basic level, even if it doesn't actually save you much money, there's something about when you first put that seed in the ground or put a potato in and you look after it, you nurture it, and then suddenly it's multiplied and it feeds you. There's just the directness of the connection. Suddenly all these hidden warehouses and shipping routes and supply chains, it's just so direct, and it just feels like it's nourishing more than just your calorific input. There's a whole other angle to it. And so it is with clothes. It's like I found even putting a button on a shirt or patching a hole, suddenly that item of clothing just becomes so much more personal and meaningful. My friend Mark said that, what we give up for convenience, we lose in meaning, kind of.
That's really
And
true.
there's something about that. It's like we're actually being, it's like we've been, we're giving away or being robbed of a very fundamental joy, that of seeing something that you've helped nurture come to fruition and then feed you or add towards a garment that's going to clothe you. And I don't I'm far from feeding myself just from the allotment all year round, but there's these little runs of it where I'm going, oh my goodness, the food that I'm growing at the allotment is feeding me to give me the energy to go out and forage the nettles and grow the flax, which I'm then using to clothe me, to keep me warm when I'm working on growing the food to feed me to. And it's like, wow, suddenly it's just this really immediate feedback loop. And it's not always easy either, and I think that there's a sort of resilience that you're being taught. Sometimes things don't grow, sometimes they get eaten by something else, sometimes something flattens the flax crops, sometimes it's trudging through deep mud to get to the nettles and But in the immediacy of it, it feels to me there's this level of resilience that feels really important to, you know, I don't know what the direction of future. I just know that we're probably heading into a period of much lower energy usage, that we've got, that's the direction of travel, whether it's by choice or design. And, you know, I sort of always have in the back of my mind the fragility of the complicated structure of how food and clothes are delivered. And at the moment, or the way we have built up the systems with this sort of huge input of cheap fossil fuels over the last few decades, that those big function systems, global systems of how stuff's delivered and not really stored, it's just it's moved so efficiently, are all well and good while everything's there in place, but it doesn't take much for suddenly that's those supply chains to be disrupted and things take on a different nature very, very quickly. So, you know, I really feel that it, and I might be an extremist in this sense, but I just feel that it's important that we grow a, however small, a sort of parallel system whereby we are replacing machinery back with a much higher level of human input and labor, just so a knowledge isn't lost, but also that it's just the more resilience and locality is built into a system, just the more robust everything else is. And, you know, and so whilst I know there's people looking on a much bigger scale about how we can grow the flax industry in this country again, much more sustainable fiber for our region with a long history, how we can reintroduce hemp growing, and all these initiatives are really, really important. But I think where my focus is just on an even much smaller scale. It's like, what can you grow in your garden, on your allotment, and produce using very, very simple tools, like just breaking it down to as easy as it can possibly get, because, you know, there's just so many complex issues going forward. It's like with regenerative agriculture, with the need for more natural fibers, there's just going to be such pressures on growing space and how we feed ourselves and clothe ourselves and do all the myriad of things. So the, you know, the most important thing to be learning through growing food and in some small way seeing what it takes to produce cloth is it suddenly really shifts the way you think about clothing, for example. You know, this blip that we're living in of the last 50 years, even where clothing has become so cheap as to be disposable. And with that, you know, we're almost like with the economies of scale and just the shifting of lowest common denominator labor from all different parts of the world to create this cheapness, is we've just created this ridiculous excess of clothing. And for most of our history, clothing would have been one of the most precious things that you owned and one of the most expensive things that you could own. And as a result, more people had to be involved in the production of their own clothing. And I think when you start to see quite what it takes to produce clothing, is your need or your appreciation because it just makes you more conservative and how much you actually need, because you can see the direct cost from your immediate landscape. You know, it's like if suddenly you couldn't get clothing from a high street store, there's just, you know, nettles would be stripped out within a day of everyone trying to find that fiber. It's, you know, it's, but I just feel that with little pockets of land which aren't being used, that small fiber crop growing can happen, and it can, in some small way, contribute. I think it's at this stage, it's more about changing a mindset or re-engaging a mindset. It's a sort of symbolic act rather than one of practicality. But if I do feel that probably with food growing and fiber production, there will be necessity, a shift of it becoming much more labor intensive and less dependence on large scale machinery, just across the board. And hopefully we'll find middle grounds which are more efficient than just straight on hand labor. But the basic skills of how to do those things feels like that's really important, that we keep that alive.
I think we probably both agree completely that about sort of current economic systems and globalization systems not really supporting a lot of the things that we would like to see in terms of more energy efficiency, more hands-on production, more mindfulness in production and localization. And I was thinking about when you were speaking. One of the previous people I've had on the podcast was talking about Gandhi and how he had talked about valuing the people who got their hands dirty. I think it was Paul Baisley, the actor, actually. And he said, what we do is we kind of push ourselves away from the dirt. We say we don't need to be in the dirt. We have other people to do that. You know, we can buy the clothes in the shop and we can put them on and we can throw them away. So we disengage from that whole process of dirt, whereas soil is life, you know, and the more you have your hands dirty and you're the person who's doing the growing and then getting involved all the way through, as you say, not only is that valuable for a number of reasons to do with how we run the world, but it's good for us as people to understand all those processes, pass those down to the next generation, and just for our general health and well-being to be part of that. And I think the next step away from that, which I've always been a big fan of, is if you're not doing it yourself, at least have a really clear understanding of who is doing it and how they're doing it and making choices about how they're doing it. So understanding the stories behind things. So if you are going to buy clothing that's been made a long way away, and let's face it, in the current economic system, most of us still are, then at least know how they're being produced and that it's not in some kind of system where they're in slavery or something's being grown with terrible effects on the environment, too much water or pesticides or whatever. So I think it's all related to that same thing of that connection, isn't it? Being connected with everything, which is, I think, it's really, really important. I want to remind you of something you've probably forgotten. The first time I met you a few years ago, you were showing me, I think you had a little bit of nettle fabric that you'd woven. And you completely sold me on, I think you said, the democratization of clothing, that we think about fiber as something we can't get hold of as people. So when people are making clothes, they maybe go and buy the fabric themselves, and then they make the clothes and they say, I made that, which is fantastic. I'm not knocking it. But you were saying, well, nettles, people don't grow them deliberately. They just grow everywhere, you know, so you can just go and pick them and you can go and make your clothing. And you haven't had to go out and buy this fabric because you can take it right from the ground. I thought that was quite an interesting thought.
And it isn't. I was just showing you a book earlier, From Sting to Spin by Gillian Adon. This is a great book just on the history of nettle fiber. So thorough, and this is the third reprint of it, which is amazing. But there is something very, and it's interesting that Gillian came to the same conclusion completely sort of independently. And when we met, we sort of were, oh my goodness, was this sense that nettles all seems to have just resisted mechanization all the way through. There have been so many attempts at it over the years, because it's like, wow, it grows by itself. It must be, how can we upscale this? And they've just never, it's never really happened to any great degree, especially with our Urtica dioica wild nettle. So there's a sort of slightly romantic air around the nettle, which where it's almost like pointing a way back. It's kind of it, showing, and because of its that sort of strange it's like a plant that stings you, but yet it contains this fiber which can protect you. And that's something that I kept coming to during the process of making what became the nettle dress, was that's sort of, and nettles are kind of like sparrows or something. They love human habitation. They love the effluence of our livestock and ourselves and that sort of rich water. Nettles kind of follow humans around, and human, they are an incredibly nutritious plant, and they have this fiber, but they sort of demand something of you to get it. And and so I always thought, think of nettles as the fiber of the landless. They're sort of, it's hard fought for, but it's just growing in all the nooks and crannies, and it just looks after it itself. And unlike so many things, it actually promotes wildlife and butterflies as part of its cycle. So, but it, you know, it, I've heard it said if it didn't sting, it would have been grazed out of existence because it is so nutritious. So, yeah, and that was it. That was another aspect of looking at what fibers we've traditionally used to clothe ourselves in this country and in Europe. And it's really nettle to a lesser extent. I think nettle's heyday, the further you go back, the more nettle was used. But where flax and hemp came in, those were the, they're just much easier to work with, much higher levels of fiber. And then wool, of course. But of the plant fibers, the bast fibers, nettle, flax and hemp, they really are these incredible plants that are food, medicine, and fiber for clothing. They contain all of those. They really are quite remarkable plants in that. So, and just so well suited to our climate. And it's, and it's amazing how it's just within touching distance of, when I've demonstrated flax processing at a woodland event in Sussex, I'll have people going, "Oh, I remember the old flax factory at Burgess Hill," or "I remember using flax. I was a plumber, and I used, that's how we used to join pipes together." And it's just astonishing how quickly that it just dropped, when synthetic fibers came in just post-war, how that just so quickly changed the landscape. And it's like, even though I realize I do romanticize and idealize things, I also see why people would have readily dropped an ancient thing when something came along that just seems so much easier, because there's no two ways about it. When you If you are having to grow, process, spin, weave, and create the clothes directly from your landscape, it's a huge endeavor, and that would what you would have been doing with so much of your time. So, when things arise which give us greater freedoms, which bring so many other changes with them, both positive and negative, I can see why we've grabbed them eagerly. But you don't know the negative sides of things at the beginning, and we do now. We are realizing what the implications of synthetic fibers are having on the environment. But we're also aware of just how many incredible uses these fibers have for positive things. So what I'm really interested is areas in which we can replace or lower the usage of things that are unnecessarily destructive without losing the many beneficial materials and ways of working with certain fibers and materials are. So, it seems obvious to me that if we're producing, I can't remember the figures off the top of my head, but however many billion garments we create every year at the moment, 2/3 of which are going into landfill, in the first year, that's just some crazy level of overproduction and heavy fuel usage and tax on the environment, which we could just so easily cut out of the system while still keeping all the useful areas of where synthetic fibers have really added to our the way we live. So yeah, same with, I mean, with food. You know, there's how much of the growing of food can we bring back to a local level where it just feels wastage is not always, but is lowered. I mean, we had the Allotment Federation here in Brighton commissioned a report just to work out exactly, you know, we were always being told that allotments were kind of loss leaders for council. They got less in rent than they cost to keep upkeep, and so there's always this pressure to keep raising the price of them, whereas the whole ethos of an allotment is to allow people on the bottom level of income to be able to supplement their feeding their families with, you know, nutritious food. And when the actual environment and social benefits of allotments and that type of food growing were added up, it turns out that allotments are adding, you know, in Brighton alone, tens of thousands of pounds to, I mean, I think it was like £300,000 to the council in terms of less money being needing to spend on elderly people who are lonely, people carrying home food in rucksacks and it not having to be transported by trucks and wrapped in plastic, you know, and what carbon capturing local biodiversity things. And when you actually put a cost onto these things, which are usually uncosted, it really changed the picture. We go, oh my goodness. So in actual fact, you know, if you were a council and you didn't take into account all these things, it would be one of the best things you could do would be to open up more allotments. And
But that is, unfortunately, that puts us back to that whole economic situation again, in that the system that we're in doesn't value those things, because it only values, you know, what the cost that can be measured in terms of GDP and imports and exports and tax and all of those kind of things. And that has, you know, I don't want to be a rampant non-economic system person the way I am. It's you know, we're looking at things like donut economics and other economic systems that value the whole picture, the true cost, as they say. Then those schemes you're talking about are an absolute no-brainer, and we'd revisit so many of the different things that we do. I mean, you can't imagine a government encouraging people to go and make their own clothes out of nettles, would you? Because there's absolutely no tax changing hands. There's no benefit for the economic system. So they're just not going to enjoy it, not going to like it.
That's exactly right. And it occurred to me a while ago that, you know, rather than using metrics like GDP and national debt, we should be looking at national depth, like how deep is your soil. And, you know, that's for me, that's one of the measures. You know, when we took on that allotment site, you could only get your spade half a blade in before you hit the chalk. Now you can stand on your spade and it will keep going down. That soil's just built up, and that, you know, that really does feel like the wealth, you know, that is. But yeah, as you say, it's, you know, it's complicated. And I listen, you know, increasingly I listen to economists and just try and understand how the wider system works and exactly, you know, but I soon find myself just feeling pulled out of my depth. And so I keep stepping back and just going, the things I can have some control over is I can plant a bed of flax in that bit at the allotment, which is under the tree and is not great for the veg, but my dye plants work well there. It's just how to utilize these little bits of land available to me right here and now. And, you know, I only grow a tiny amount of flax, but I'm already storing more than I can actually spin and use in a year. And I'm saving the seed, and I can't remember. I was listening to a podcast about the very first economists who weren't really even called economists. They were like, I think the guy was a French physician, but it was doctors, physicians were starting to understand the circulatory system of the human body and stuff. And I can't remember what the word for it, but they didn't call themselves economics, but the it was understood by them that what wealth is was what a land produced. Like labor wasn't, that was the only thing that seemed to multiply. You plant a plant and then you get 1,000 seeds from that one plant, and that there seems to be a sort of a multiplying effect. And of course there's all sorts of factors that reduce that down, but so it feels like with growing fiber and textiles, it's like this, you just do your little bit of delivering a bit of wood chip onto that bit, or occasionally a delivery of manure or whatever, but otherwise the sunlight and the plants are producing this excess of wealth, which you cream off your bit, put some of it back in, and everything else in all walks of life seems to be reducing or becoming less, or but in those direct materials of fibers and food, there's just this innate multiplying effect, which
We should be talking about growth in a different way than we talk about growth, really, shouldn't we? We're always talking about financial growth and all the everything's got to be in terms of growth and the economy growing, but actually the only things that really grow are plants, and they've got a certain and almost a an unfettered capacity to keep growing and keep producing under the right circumstances.
That's right, because they are, that's the, nature is the technology which can most efficiently change sunlight into living systems. And, our growth economic system is based on energy, which the primary source of which we're depleting and wasting it, so however complicated it is at basic levels, that we need to reduce fossil fuel usage for environmental reasons, but it's also a finite resource which we're burning through. And so
We're just thinking about ourselves, and maybe one generation on, we're not thinking about the future.
exactly right, yeah. So it's like how when you start to extrapolate, what does a system look like that's much less energy dependent? We do have examples all around the world of people living in a much, much less fuel heavy way. I mean, I heard something the other day that the human body, the metabolic rate of the human body at rest is like 100 watts, like a light bulb. I mean, it's just mind-blowingly efficient that all this internal and physical systems built on such a small level of energy. But the way we live, largely in the West at any rate, is we have a metabolic pull on the system, the equivalent to 12 full-grown elephants. So each person on the planet, you'd see the on the savannah how much area a tribe, a group of elephants walking, what their 100-mile capacity of landscape needs to nurture and keep them going. We are, each one of us is the equivalent of that. And clearly it's coming because we've got this incredibly useful fossil fuel underpinning to us. So it's like, as that reduces, what does it look like? And I think, I look towards people in other places in the world which seem to have still have all the things that we value: friendship, family, music, song, spirituality, you know, these sorts of basic things, but at a much, much lower energy cost. So, you know, and so it is with, you know, when you do take on a bit of food growing or a bit of fiber growing, it's like what ends up happening? You're spending time outside, chatting with friends, sitting around, doing things a bit more communally, and you don't really have want for very much, but there's a deep satisfaction coming from it. So I feel like what we're going to need to give up can seem like it's a stripping away of, you know, that we don't want that. We don't want to be thrown back into being scratching a living off the soil, or however we imagine it. But we're not necessarily seeing the beneficial things. You know, people are isolated. We're suffering increasing degrees of mental anguish and isolation, and that's a sort of product of the system too. So, you know, the
We
direction.
learned in the pandemic, didn't we? I mean, in the pandemic, most people, not everyone, of course, but a lot of people were surprised by how community was important, nature was important. When people were talking about how lovely it was, all the planes weren't going over all the time, and you could hear the birds singing, and you could go for a walk, go for a cycle, whatever. And that felt a lot of people, and I think people haven't all gone back to how it was. I mean, people have really strongly resisted going back to work in the cities, and they've wanted to live more in the country and work from home, and you know, and value going out into nature quite a lot more. But the pressure has certainly been from the government for economic reasons, and is to try it, you know, everyone get back to your offices. You have to go back to your offices. And why you're seeing all the time now on the news, but why is some of the population of the UK not economically active, you know, and things like that? And it's just this strange pressure. Why it's almost like there's something wrong, as you say. We'll be scrabbling around in the dirt if we're not living according to the system we're supposed to live by. So it's a strange, we it doesn't have to be one or the other, you know. We can be choosing the best parts of each, I think.
Yes, yeah, I think that's exactly right. And yeah, you know, as we've mentioned before, the metrics by which we measure these things just aren't really fit for purpose these days. You know,
No.
I mean, we know that we can't, on a planet with finite resources and finite material limits, we can't just keep growing. Our political system is such that no one can really step up and sell the idea that, look, we're going to have to degrow. You know, that just is not on the table. It would be suicide for any political party to do it. So it's like we really can't wait for directives from those from that level. It's, there's a whole yeah, there's a sort of layer of awareness which is sort of spreading rhizomially underneath that,
Yeah,
like
it's
a sort of,
grassroots. It's
yeah,
definitely grassroots. And I think that's what you're saying about growing your own and taking control of your own environment. And that brings me neatly on to the nettle dress, which I realize we haven't really talked about properly yet. Sorry for pausing the discussion there. You can hear the second half of my conversation with Alan Brown in the next episode of the Where Does It Come From podcast, episode 39, The Nettle Dress. Thank you for listening to the Where Does It Come From podcast. Please rate us on your platform and follow us so that we can share this podcast with more people. And if you'd like to find out more about the work of Where Does It Come From, please visit our website on wheredoesitcomefrom.co.uk for kind clothes that tell tales.